We'd like to thank the Monterey County CVB, who helps groups of all sizes host unforgettable meetings. With stunning landscapes, world-class accommodations, and unique outdoor venues, inspiration comes naturally in Monterey County. Learn more at meetinmonterey.com.
Hello, everybody. This is Courtney Stanley, and welcome to another exciting episode of Dare to Interrupt, a listening experience where you have the opportunity to sit in on honest, unfiltered conversations with women who are considered to be the most influential, inspiring, and innovative leaders in the world of events, hospitality, business, and beyond. Throughout their careers, these leaders have dared to interrupt conversations, their own comfort zones, and sometimes even societal norms to hustle toward their greatest levels of success. I am super excited to introduce you to today's guest. We are joined by Anne Nguyen, Head of Customer Success at Twine and Principal and Founder of Spark Event Collective. Anne, it's super awesome to have you on the podcast. Where in the world are you joining us from?
Hi, Courtney. It's so great to be here. I am joining you from snowy Canada, believe it or not. Up until last week, it was still snowing where I was, out in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. So in the Rockies.
Nice. I have only been out that way once, kind of. I was in Edmonton once for an MPI event. And I think it was like one of those 24-hour visits where I really didn't see too much, but I definitely would like to see a little bit more of Western Canada. I haven't explored it nearly enough. And sorry to hear about the snow.
I was born and raised in Edmonton, and we fully expect what we call like second winter. So May long weekend, it'll usually snow here if things work out. But yeah, I was born in Edmonton, so I'm glad that you've been there.
Yeah. Well, I'm in Michigan, so I completely understand the Arctic situation. And we have just started to get really nice weather here, so I'm excited for summer. Yes, the expectations are set, but I also feel like I curse the second winter that comes every year. And somehow it catches me off guard every time.
We just took my winter tires off today, so that surely will jinx it.
Yes, there's always, yeah, that preemptive move that jinxes everything. Yeah. Well, it's really, really great to have you here. And I know you and I have had an opportunity to get to know each other really virtually over the past couple of years. And it's been really fun and exciting to see all of the different moves that you've made professionally, all of the cool projects that you've started. So I'd love to just give the audience an opportunity to get to know a little bit more about you. So would you just maybe give us a brief summary of where you started in your career and what that journey has really been like and how you ended up where you are today?
Sure. Yeah, that's great. I started in our industry like most people, probably accidentally. I went to university college and got a business degree in sort of computers and information systems, believe it or not. And after I did an internship, I freaked out because I realized I didn't actually enjoy working in the field that I had gone to school for. But fortunately, through my volunteer efforts, I had a mentor that sort of went down a similar path and then guided me towards finding event planning, which at the time I didn't realize was even something you could do as a career. I just thought it was like a hobby. And so I sort of abandoned my formal training and joined, Ian was his name, at his event planning company, and I never really looked back. So I worked at his company for about a decade, learning from him. It was a small business, small startup. And then did a couple of small different testing, you know, working like in an agency, working at a law firm as an event planner, and eventually started my own agency, which was Spark Event Management, which is kind of where the Spark Event Collective spun off from. So ran my own agency for a while. And then in 2018, I had a daughter. So I Elliot's now 3.5. And as a mom, a new mom, and trying to run my business, that was when everything kind of came to a crossroads for me, where it's really hard to balance all of that. And you know, as women, we talk about, can you have it all? And I'm of the belief that you can, just maybe at different times in your life, and different things have to get sacrificed. So at the end of 2018, it was a real moment for me to figure out, what was I going to do with my business? How was I going to balance that with being a new mom? And then as I was planning that out for the course of the next year, then of course the pandemic happened in 2020. So that changed everything. It sort of halted my career for me automatically, and sent me on a bit of a different journey that led me to connect with lots of our great colleagues online, led me to connect with Lawrence, who is now my boss at Twine, connected me to that opportunity at Twine, and led me to start the collective. The collective, the Spark Event Collective, is a spin-off of my agency that started in 2020. And it sort of allows women to take on contracts and projects through the collective using sort of our brand and our overarching processes and infrastructure, so that they don't have to start up their own business, but they can still have the flexibility and freedom to work on projects when and as often as they would like. So we can talk a little bit more about that, but that's kind of why I'm here. So when I explain to people, when they ask me, you know, I was at a fundraiser this Saturday and people are like, what's your job? It's like, well, it's kind of hard to explain, but I have a lot of jobs. And I start a lot of things usually on Twitter. But that's kind of how I got here. Just right now I'm in, got my hands in a lot of different buckets and doing a lot of different things. But yeah, that's a short story of how I got here.
Yeah. I feel like there is so much more color in that picture that we just haven't had a chance to hear about. And I want to dig into that a little bit more. So maybe I'll start by asking a more broad question, and then we can dig into really the heart and soul of why you created this community. So what has been maybe one of the greatest challenges that you have faced in your world, in your life, whether that's been professional or whether that's been personal?
Yeah, that's a great question. And why I was so thrilled to come on this podcast is because I know you dig into the real meat of issues, especially as they impact women. So rewind back to 2018, when I was pregnant with Elliot. As a small business owner and a woman in their 30s, you're sort of always planning for this, right? Like, you know, you want to start a family, but you also know you have this business. And how do you manage that? And there's no playbook for this. You know, lots of different people have different advice. And at the time, what I had done was I had sort of lined up my staffing like you would do as a planner to cover for you so you could take a mat leave. And in Canada, most people go on maternity leave for a year to a year and a half. And I always knew that that wasn't like a realistic situation for me as an entrepreneur, but I thought at least some time to adjust to being a new mom. And about 2 or 3 months before Elliot was born, my sort of right-hand person that I had lined up, it just became evident that it wasn't going to work out. So we parted ways. And so now I'm 7 months pregnant. I have, you know, a year and a half's worth of events to manage and a newborn on the way. So talk about challenging, was just like, I didn't have any answers, right? And I don't even really remember that phase. It sort of, you just like went on autopilot and did what you had to do. So Elliot was born in September. And when she was 4.5 weeks old, me, her dad, and her on a plane to Indianapolis to run a conference that I was hoping someone else could manage. But anyone who's run their own thing knows that that's not really an option. The buck kind of stops with you if you don't have things in place. And while we were there, like physically, I had not recovered from childbirth. So I was physically not in a state to be running a conference. At one point, I thought I was going to have to go to the emergency room. I had a staff person there who literally at 3 a.m, I said, you have to go to like the local drugstore and get, you know, formula for the baby in case I have to go to the hospital and you have to like take care of my 5-month-old or 5-week-old. Get like fever, like flu medicine, like all of this stuff. Like it was just, your body was just telling you that this is not what you should be doing. You shouldn't be like running around trying to run a conference. And at the time, I didn't really feel like I had a choice. It just was something I committed to professionally. And so we made it work. And, you know, gratefully, we all made it home safe. And but that really put a lot of things into perspective for me. And then the following year and a half, and then once the pandemic started, I just started to realize how often women have to make the choice between work or being there for their family, being their caretaker, mom, wife, or whatever it is. And I just got really frustrated at the idea that because I'm a woman, I have to make that choice. And it's always so seemingly so black and white. So I thought surely there must be a better way for us to be able to work. And that challenge, that moment in 2018, and then the following pandemic that happened, the pandemic actually gave me a reset and allowed me to rebuild this business model the way that I thought it could work. So I had a very traditional event planning agency. And then when the pandemic happened, it now allowed me to basically build a community of independent planners. So there's lots of women out there who want to be able to take on work in a more flexible way. They don't want to have to choose between, you know, if they have to stay home with a sick child or parent or spouse or whatever, for it to impact them professionally. And so the collective is really built around that principle, is take on the work when you want to, when you can. And then if something happens, now you all of a sudden have this community of women that can support you. So it's built on a sort of balance between independence and flexibility, but also community and support. And so you don't have to start up your own business. You don't have to deal with selling, insurance, legal, taxes, all of that stuff. We look after that. We bring in the work. It's sort of contracted out to these planners. And we're starting to build a really neat group of women who come from all sorts of walks of life. Most of them have either young kids, or they're single moms, or they're looking after parents, elderly parents. And we've gotten such great feedback that this allows them to shape work around what's going on in their life versus the other way around, because I find that women are so often the backbones of their family, right? That it's like, if something happens, the mom is staying home, or if, you know, a child has to quarantine, the mom staying at home. So that kind of stuff, really the challenge that, you know, that I went through in 2018, and lots of things that have happened in post that are like, I'm no longer with Elliot's dad. And that's I would say a symptom of all of the stressors of this that led to, you know, a pretty low point in my life. Was able to take that and just like figure out a new business model that would hopefully prevent or ease the transition for other women who might find themselves in a similar position.
Yeah. And I think what you're talking about is something that so many women have experienced over these past couple of years, where, you know, when push came to shove, and if there are two parents in a household, and, you know, let's say it's a man and a woman in a household, a lot of times when somebody had to stay home, somebody had to, you know, make professional sacrifices. A lot of times, you know, we saw in certain studies that it was, you know, the mother figure, the woman that had to stay at home and figure out how to flex, you know, her work schedule around the family life, because it wasn't necessarily the most natural or automatic knee-jerk response to ask the father figure in the household to do that. And we're seeing the consequences of that dynamic now. So, you know, how many women are currently out of work who were working pre-pandemic and trying to, you know, reconfigure what their next steps look like professionally, how it's affected their growth in their careers and, you know, financially, but also in terms of promotions. And I think, you know, this even points to not just the pandemic, but the bigger issue that I think you touched on beautifully, which is the idea that women are typically the ones who do make those sacrifices. But also looking at, you know, the data, even in terms of the wage gap and the different variables that go into why the gap exists. And one of those variables being women who take, you know, a few years off of work, or whether they go part-time, and how that really does actually cause their professional development and growth to suffer. So I think this is something that's been going on for a long time that was really exacerbated by the circumstances of the pandemic. And what I love about what you're doing is you're providing a different approach, where you're allowing people to build work on top of the life that they have, instead of having to try to really just squeeze everything in and, you know, do everything at once and be that superwoman and try to be on top of everything 100% all the time, which, as we know, is not actually possible.
Yeah, you'll find yourself panicking trying to Google the hospital in Indianapolis, and that's when you know that, you know, you can't have it all at once, and there's a lot of things that get sacrificed when we try to do that, right? And the other piece is, It allows me to sort of leverage 15 years of event planning, but running a business, that experience. Because oftentimes, you know, I'll talk to independent planners and they're not charging enough, right, for their services. And they don't feel like they have any sense of what market value is for some of our expertise. And for me to be able to take a contract to them and say, this is like market value, what we can charge, and you'll get a cut of this for the work that you do. Oftentimes they're quite surprised. We don't get that kind of training as women, especially in the event planning industry, of like, what can you properly charge for? And how do you calculate your profit margin? And what do you want those numbers to look like? And how do you charge for your time? So being able to bring that lens to it and helping people earn what they deserve, that's also it's an exhilarating part of this for sure.
I love that you brought that up, because I think that that is probably one of the greatest challenges that I see the clients that I coach struggle with. How much do I charge? Now, it's like this big gray cloud, this big question mark that I feel like a lot of side hustlers, entrepreneurs, freelancers, contractors struggle with, specifically, I mean, in my experience and in my conversations, women. And I have had so much fun sharing what I charge for my services with other women who are looking to do something similar, or listening to how much they've said maybe an agency was charging that they were contracting with, and encouraging them to charge the exact same amount, if not a little bit more, than what the agency was charging for their clients to do the same type of work. And that's been really fun to watch women really, you know, push themselves to get past that idea of I can't ask for that much, and just go for it and say, this is what I charge, this is my rate, and make it a statement, not a question, and watch the results come back in a really beautiful way where they actually do get the yes and they do end up getting paid what they're actually valued at. So I think it's really cool that you took it there, because that's not something that we really talk about a lot, and it holds us back. You know, it holds us back to not have full understanding and clarity of what our market value is, and have those conversations confidently and saying, this is what the market value is, and this is my rate, period.
Yep. Yeah. And it's very transparent, right? Like, we're not an agency where you come and work for us. So I'm not paying these planners a salary. They don't get benefits or anything from us, but they see the contract that we have with the client. Oftentimes we'll involve them in the negotiation piece so that they understand the scope of the project. And then it's very clear. It's like they get a percentage of it, the collective keeps a percentage of it. And so that transparency is starting, like you said, help people understand what market value is and what they should be charging if they choose to go and do other projects, because they're not tied to us exclusively, right? They all typically have other initiatives that they're working on. The flexibility of it, the autonomy of it is huge for us. But then the flip side of it is, you know, how we used to raise kids in community, and how we as a species used to be much more community-based. Like the idea that, you know, Courtney, you're working on a project, but let's say, you know, God forbid something happens and you have to step back. There's now backfill, right? There's other planners that can step in. We have similar processes, so the client gets the same as a similar experience. But having that backup as an independent planner is really, really the benefit of this model is you're not by yourself, but you can work independently and with what suits you. So I'm really excited about the model. I don't know if you can tell, I'm jazzed about it, but it just felt like the right evolution of my career as I sort of stepped away more from the day-to-day planning, being able to like help other planners get there. It's been very rewarding.
Yeah, I can definitely see that it has been. And I actually didn't really know anything about the community, so it's been fun to hear more about that and learn more about that, and also just learn more about you and your story. And something that I identify with and that really resonates with me is really making something that's been painful or difficult into something that's purposeful and serves others. And that's exactly what you've done with this community, and I'd love to see that. It just, the work becomes so meaningful, and clearly you're serving a need that other women have. So that's really, really awesome. So one of the questions that I asked, so every time for the audience, every time we do one of these conversations, we have one of these recordings, I'll ask my guests to submit some questions. What do you want to talk about? What do you care about the most? What do you love? What are you struggling with? Those types of things. And for Anne, one of the questions that you submitted that you wanted to talk through is, how do you think we solve the polarity that we're seeing in the world today? And I'd love to just better understand what that question means to you. And then I'd love for you to talk through your thought process and your response.
Yeah. So this is taking a bit of a shift into the world, into the Twine world, where I'm spending most of my time and focus nowadays. I think that, you know me, I spend a lot of time on social media. I spend a lot of time on Twitter. I think that's maybe how we met. But
I think so too.
Yeah, that's how I meet a lot of my friends. There's so many beautiful things about social media, the ability to connect with people that you otherwise wouldn't have access to, the ability to actually build relationships over the years by sharing content you're interested in and being part of communities online. But there's also this dark side of social media, right? And this is so top of mind, especially with like the news from last week with Elon Musk and all of this stuff, that you can really get sucked into this divisiveness and this polarity that you see on social media of, you know, us versus them, blue versus red, you know, vaccinated, not vaccinated, all of that stuff. And the pandemic seems to have either highlighted something that was already there or exacerbated it, right? So it's like, this has always been a thing that's top of mind for me ever since I've heard a speaker named Tim Arnold talk about, he calls it leading with and he has a new book out where the world would be a lot better place if leaders could figure out how to manage with an and mindset instead of an or mindset, right? And we're naturally prone to going this or that. We're taught right or wrong from a young age, right? And so I heard Tim speak about it and I started noticing it everywhere. It's like we see things in such a binary way that it's starting to really move us as a species farther away from each other. And my work at Twine, which basically is like a connection platform where you sit and you have conversations with people and they're structured and they're intentional. I find that those conversations are really helping bridge that gap when you can sort of sit in curiosity and listen to someone else's perspective. It's a lot harder when you're face to face or camera to camera to just shut down another person's ideas and say, well, I don't like your ideas and therefore I don't like you. That would be really hard for me to do right now, right? If I was talking to you about something we disagreed on. So our work at Twine has thrust me deep into conversations, impactful conversations, meaningful conversations. How do you create space for those? How do you facilitate them? And what kind of approach do you need to take to get curious about someone else's perspective? Try to, add different perspectives to your opinions, check your blind spots, check your biases. And those types of things have proven to be able to help us bridge some of the polarity, bridge some of the gaps. I've started practicing some of that in the way I speak about things when I hear someone that has like a really opposing perspective, checking myself and trying to dig into their perspective. So that question is really important to me because I think that's the only way we're going to get to sort of better innovative solutions. What we're seeing now, where we just continue to push each other further and further apart, and you sort of like galvanize communities on really far ends of the spectrum. I find that really troubling as I raise a young child in this world, right? How to teach her how to think critically and be able to bond and connect with people who disagree with her. And those are the dynamics that I think are going to make this world livable in her future. At the current pace it's going, it seems like that's harder than ever to get to. And so it's all kind of tied to just my belief that sitting down and having conversations with people is how you get across that divide. That was a long-winded answer, but it's
I think it's an important topic and I appreciate your perspective. And I agree with your perspective as well. I think critical thinking has lost, I think, some of its importance and just presence, encouragement of people stepping outside of, a tribal nature and this side is good, this side is bad. and really, you know, thinking outside of those lines and asking themselves more questions, deeper questions, and other people. I think, so one question that I had when you were talking through this is, have you seen or experienced this kind of polarity within our industry, within the meetings and events space?
Yeah, I mean, in the most benign version of it, the conversations we have about virtual versus in-person, like what's coming back, what isn't, there's some divide happening there for sure. But then there's really, deeper, more intense topics where this comes up about DEI, right? And, you know, there was a conversation on LinkedIn or Twitter the other day about, is having a panel of colored speakers really diverse, right? If all they're talking about is DEI, you have panels of all white people, and then you have one panel of, you know, your token Black panelist, Asian panelist, women panelist, and that's your DEI panel. Like, is that really diverse? And so those types of conversations can get really heated, right? It's a sensitive topic. It's an important topic. People feel strongly one way or another about it. And when you try to have these conversations on social media, it just never goes well, right? So it's hard to understand someone else's perspective in 280 characters. And I saw the conversation just totally degrade, right? Like, and then it gets to like, well, you're a white person that doesn't understand this, and you know, you are left and woke and cancel culture. And then it just gets to that point where we've totally separated to the two far extremes of the spectrum. And there's no bridging that now that dynamic exists, right? So it's like, I really believe that if you had a forum for conversation and it was well structured and it was well facilitated and thought out and designed, and we took all of the skills as event planners and designed a space for this, the conversation could have gotten a lot different, and we could have maybe come together with some innovative solutions and be more, yeah, solutions oriented than, like you said, I'm right, you're wrong, you're good, I'm bad, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, so I see it a lot, and everything from, like I said, really benign topics to things that really get people's heart racing and people are passionate about, as they should be. But yeah, I think the skill set is an important one, is listening, being curious, checking your biases, you know, making sure that you have people pointing out your own blind spots, checking your confirmation bias, all of that kind of stuff that is hard to do when you're only communicating through your keyboard.
Right, right. I'm going to put this back over to you here, because I am genuinely curious about what your advice would be. If you were to put together a panel, somebody said, I want this to be a diverse panel, what would you do? How would you craft that group of people?
Yeah, I would likely ask them, if diversity is important to you, how is the rest of your event taking that into account? So it's not just the one DEI panel that you have for the sake of having it, but are you talking to diverse suppliers when you're talking about your event? Have you asked your, vendors what their DEI policies are? Are you bringing in people who can talk about other things? They just happen to be women or people of color, and get them to look at it more than just like this 1 hour of, we're going to talk about DEI for 1 hour and have a diverse panel for that. But it's like, you know, I talked to Kenesha Williams a lot about this, where she's like, I get brought in a lot to speak about DEI in the events, but she's also a very, experienced and talented event planner in her own right, that she could talk about a lot of different topics, right? Just because she's a Black woman doesn't necessarily mean that's all she can talk about. So I think getting our clients or, you know, event owners to zoom out and look at all of their DEI efforts on their event, not just like the one panel that they have. And the flip side of that is, to include, I just attended a clubhouse that was like a white person's perspective on systemic racism. Okay. And that was a heated conversation, but creating space for those types of conversations that make us a little bit uncomfortable, that challenge the way we think, like those types of things is, I think, how we actually move this ahead versus sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes it comes off more as tokenism when you're just doing it for the sake of having that check mark on your to-do list that you have a DEI panel with women and Black people on it, right? Like that doesn't get us very far, I don't think.
So it's interesting because I feel like what you're touching on, you know, a lot of times when we think about DE&I, we think about, you know, what people look like and, you know, maybe the different cultures that they come from, their different backgrounds, that kind of thing. But I think this is really applicable to looking at gender as well. You know, I think one of the areas that we've seen our industry in terms of education and representation try to improve on over the past handful of years is getting more women on panels. You know, we've heard the word mantle before and we still see this happening. It's not like we've fixed the problem, but our industry has made an effort, I think, to reduce the mantles and get, you know, more female voices involved in conversations. But I think what's interesting is that what we often see at our industry conferences is we see these sessions that are especially dedicated for women. And a lot of times I'll be involved in those conversations and I love those conversations. But to your point, I think what we might be missing the mark on is that we have these conversations for women with women that are featured as speakers, as panelists, that kind of thing. But then when we walk out of the room and we go into another session that's not for women or marketed toward women specifically, we're not necessarily seeing women represented on the stage to talk about things other than being a woman or being this particular profession and how that experience has been as a woman, where I think we are missing the mark in other areas as well, where we're looking at things like people's background, their walk of life, their experience, their knowledge, the different, you know, cultural experiences that they've had in their life. And again, we're putting people into that one room to say, let's talk about cultural differences. And then we walk into another room about marketing strategy or event logistics or whatever. And we're not necessarily seeing those diverse voices and experiences represented in those conversations.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's dead on. And I think, you know, for an industry that is largely made up of women, looking around to see how often they occupy leadership positions, right? And looking, if you're a man, there's a few really simple things you can do to help, right? So is there a woman that you can help kind of advocate for in your organization? Even something as simple as telling her what your salary is, if she's a peer, that is like the quickest way you can help a woman and help women start to get equal footing on things, right? And same goes for white people helping people of color, for any sort of majority group helping a minority group. There's lots of systemic things that are still needing to be looked at that don't get solved, like you said, by, you know, a group of women having a conversation about women in the events industry in a room full of women, and then going to the main plenary session and, you know, listening to a man talk about something else. And it's complex. It's super nuanced, right? And there's lots of room here for creative solution finding. And back to what we were talking about is the idea that if we can just sit down and have conversations about this, where it's not me against you and it's not, you know, so binary, that's where we start to get really creative solutions and where we can find kind of new middle ground, kind of in the gray, not so black and white.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, you know, the bottom line is that having different perspectives, experience, knowledge in a room together is beneficial to everybody. We've seen time and time again, different studies showcasing that diversity is an asset in whatever form it may show up as. It's something that actually benefits the culture of an organization, the productivity, the bottom line of a company, the experience that employees have, the connectedness that a culture has. So it's for the best to be able to bring these different perspectives into one room, but are we doing it in a way that is actually serving the audience and the speakers and the organization well? So definitely room for improvement, but I'm glad to see that this is something that our industry is continuing to talk about and continuing to try to really make advancements in. So we talked a lot about, you know, the different direction that your career has moved, the challenges that you've faced. What has been your greatest success or your proudest moment, professionally speaking?
Yeah, this is an interesting question when you sort of preceded it with me. And it actually has nothing to do with like anything I've accomplished in terms of an achievement or an award or anything like that. I had a moment when, you know, when I ran my company, Spark Event Management, at our peak, I think there was 9 or 10 of us, all women. And for various reasons, as you like go through an entrepreneurial journey, you have lots of great successes with your team. And then you have lots of moments of like deep failure, right? Where you could have showed up better, you could have done differently, you could have made a different decision, and it would have impacted all of these people's careers really differently. But we sort of reached a moment early, you know, mid 2018, when I was pregnant and the company was undergoing a bit of an evolution, and that team sort of went their separate ways. They all sort of went off and did different things, and it sort of like dissolved kind of on its own a little bit. And at the time, that felt like quite a big failure for me, that you like couldn't keep the team together and people were quitting to go do different things. They were burnt out. And then fast forward sort of like a year and a half during the pandemic, that group of women has come together in a really different way, where a few of them have like explored different projects together. One of them has hired the other. You know, our designer still does work for all of us on different projects, and those relationships continue to build beyond Spark, beyond me, beyond the company that they work for, beyond their first jobs. They've all gone on to done really cool things with their career or become mothers, and the fact that I was able to create a space for 6 or 7 years for these women that allowed them to foster these relationships, allowed them to like discover who they are and go on to do different things. Some of them aren't in the industry anymore. And I get glimpses of those as they like progress with their careers. And that's why what makes me more proud than anything is that, you know, through all the trials and tribulations of running my own company, there was space that was created that was full of intention and love and, you know, compassion and empathy for each other, that 10 years later, they're still all friends and working together and, you know, blossoming in their own careers. And that's probably more rewarding than like any kind of achievement you can come up with on your own. Being able to create that space for, you know, a handful of other women is very rewarding.
Yeah. Yeah. I can definitely relate to that. And I think, yeah, I would definitely agree. I think having the opportunity to be a part of somebody's story and, you know, hopefully a positive way, I think that's what we, most of us strive to do, is to create an experience where people are free to fail and learn and meet new people and grow as human beings and then move on to another chapter and hopefully look back at whatever experience it was in a way that they feel grateful for. I think that that's super cool. I think that's awesome. And I think a lot of people would agree that that would be many of the most rewarding moments that people have in their lives, whether it's as a parent, whether it's as a teacher, whether it's as a, you know, a business owner or a coach. So it's great that you've had that opportunity to do that. And I have one final question for you. Okay. And it's really for the audience. If you could share one piece of advice with other women in business, maybe not just in the events industry, what would it be?
Yeah, great question. I think the last 2 years have really shown me that the investments that you make in your community, and I don't mean, it doesn't have to be your work community. It doesn't have to be in the event industry. It could be your church. It could be your neighborhood, your other parents, whatever that is. Just really nurture those relationships, right? And take time to invest in that, because when push comes to shove and, you know, when a global pandemic shuts down your industry, or when you have those moments where you feel like you've hit a wall and you can't do it and you sort of hit that rock bottom, it's that community and it's those people that are going to pull you out, and will be there to support you. So, yeah, just don't take that for granted. Don't you know, we always think, oh, I can do that later. I'll make that call later. I'll send that email later. I haven't caught up with this person in however long, but time goes by really fast. And I think if you're not investing in that community, you're going to find yourself a little bit lonely when push comes to shove. And we all know that push will come to shove, right? Not everyone, nobody has like a perfect journey to their destination. So having that help along the way has been, you know, I can't describe it. Like, I wouldn't be here without the people that have supported me. So yeah, just spend time investing in that.
I think that's great advice. And I couldn't agree with that more. And those rock bottom moments do come, whether it's professional or it's personal. Having that community of support, it makes all the difference. All the difference. So I couldn't agree more with you, Anne. And I want to thank you so much for sharing everything that you did with us today, your insight, your knowledge, bits of your story. I feel like there's so many more questions that I have for you, even on a personal level. And audience, I want to thank you all for listening. Share what you learned from this episode with me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram by following at Meetings Today and at Courtney on Stage. And be sure to never miss an episode by subscribing to Dare to Interrupt on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and more. Be bold, invest in your community, and keep daring to interrupt, my friends. Until next time.